Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We have a lot of things still to go through, and I know this is Constitution Week, and Constitution Week actually is going to be ending today, and it's taken us a little bit of time to kind of dive through the Constitution, but I want you to know that I think some of the editorializing is invaluable. I think that we need to go through, and what we just went through was Article 2, the choosing of the president, or Article 2, the choosing of the electors, I should say, in the Electoral College. So what we need to go through next is the 12th Amendment. But before we do, I would be remiss if I did not say that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And so that is why we also have you tuning in, because this show is all really about the solutions. As I constantly engage with people, I keep on pointing out the fact that we are so far out of alignment that what the framers had given us and their greatest fears that we would be living under a standing army in a tyrannical centrally, centrally managed government, where the federal government is all-powerful, all-knowing, and has created the Oz. That was their greatest fear. They did not want to see the government take on. So one of the things that they did was they created three separate branches so that it wouldn't be all collected into just one person. And what they did was they tried to protect us from the avarice of power and the evil machinations of men, or people, humans, however you want to put it. But the fact of the matter is that even though they've created all of these protections, there has still been a way and a process, all violations of the Constitution, but those who have, let's just say, evil, let's say they're on the darker side of this world, they have been successful in moving this country in the direction of an all-powerful, centralized, managed government. Now, that's why we talk about the only solution. And we have been, I'll just use the word promulgate, we've been disseminating that video that was created by, I believe it's Anarchy or Hanarchy Productions, so that people for Constitution Week have a good opportunity for 6 minutes kind of get immersed in the Constitution, the problem, and the solution regarding Republic Review. So if you haven't seen the video, it is up on the Republic Review, or at least the link is. It's up on the Republic Review YouTube page. It's on the Take Action page if you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. Now, for those of you who have not the opportunity or do not have the opportunity to listen to this entire show, but you want to get more information regarding the Electoral College or any of our other shows, you have to dial in 605-562-4209 to actually hear the entire show. And the nice thing is you're not paying for your, you know, long distance or anything else, nor does this affect your data. So it's a win-win, right? Okay, so anyway, one of the things that I want to really quickly point out, and that we do have a sponsor, and our sponsor is Red State Coffee, and we'd ask that you would support our one sponsor. We would love to have more. We're looking for more sponsors so that we can help kind of cover our costs. And so please support our sponsor. It's Red State Coffee. Go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you drink coffee, get your coffee on. If you're going to buy coffee, then why not buy Red State Coffee? especially if you understand the magnitude of the problem. We're it's really, really frustrating because as people start understanding, there are supposedly good organizations and good people. I run into them all the time that as soon as they realize, wow, this is going to solve the problem, which I'm banking on making a lot of money, or my organization is, you know, our relevance is based on the problem. There are a lot of people that are vested in the problem. And that in itself is a problem. So when we start looking and people come to me and say, oh, you've got to get this guy involved. And this guy, who maybe a conservative entertainer, maybe somebody that is supposedly out fighting a good fight, but they are vested in fighting the problem. And if all of a sudden the problem goes away, their funding goes away, their relevance goes away. The problem is their, if you want to call it, their sugar daddy. The problem is actually their mechanism of maintaining relevance. But what are we going to do? Are we going to allow them to, at our own expense and at our own demise, allow them to continually steer the ship down this dangerous course? Or are we going to finally take the commitment and say, we absolutely have to take control? And that's what we need to do, folks. We need to take control. And the way to do that is Republic Review. And Republic Review, as we start explaining this, as you start going through this, we go through this all the time. We actually explain it here. And if you want to know the details, just go to reclaimingtherepublic.org. The bullet process is right there. You can look at the argument, the process, and even the model. And so let me just dive into, because I don't want to waste any more time doing our obligatories and so forth. What I want to do is dive into the 12th Amendment. Now, you got to understand here, the process of changing anything, regardless of how great or how minor it is, even though there seem to be a lot of words regarding the 12th Amendment. The 12th Amendment really only made what I would say a minor change to how we choose the president and vice president. If you read Article 2, Section 1, I think it's Section 1. Let me just make sure I go back to, because it's important to have these types of things straight. And so, yeah, it's Section 1. It's the first thing we get into is the choosing of the president, the Electoral College, and all of that. And so, if you read that, it is very clear that the electors vote for, they cast two ballots, one for a person in their state, and the other vote that they cast cannot be for somebody in their state. But both ballots are for the president. Whoever gets the most in the old process was going to become the president, and whoever was the second most was the vice president. Now, if there were ties for the most or for the second most, there was a process of how they would delineate the ties. And the tie, if there was a tie by the Electoral College, it immediately swung into the House and so forth. And so, and I believe if you get through it, it talks about even choosing for the vice president, it will go to the Senate for the final choice of the vice president. But let's get into how the 12th Amendment, and it says right up here at the very top, this amendment altered Article 2, Section 1, Part 2 of the Constitution. In other words, and most amendments, just like the 17th Amendment, the 17th Amendment said what part of the Constitution it was changing. And that's why when you read the 17th Amendment, I'm going on a tangent here. When you read the 17th Amendment, it does not make any changes to Article 5 because the authors of the 17th Amendment were idiots. They didn't know what they were doing was creating a direct conflict within the Constitution. So anyway, let's move forward. And this was passed by Congress in December of 1803, and it was fully ratified or ratified by enough of the states in July 27th, 1804. So we're talking about basically a half a year it took for this to get out to the states and get ratified and be sent back. So it starts off with the electors shall meet in their respective states. Pretty much just like the first part of Section 2, the electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for president and vice president. Now, here's the key. In the original Section 2, or Section 1, Part 2 of the Constitution, and shall vote by ballot for two persons of whom at least one shall not be an inhabitant of the same state of themselves. And in this case, and vote by ballot, this is the 12th Amendment, and vote by ballot for president and vice president, one of whom at least shall not be an inhabitant of the same state. So now they were changing this mechanism of the electors voting for a president on one ballot and a vice president, and they both could not be from the same state. Of whom at least shall not be an inhabitant of the same state with themselves, they shall name in their ballots the person voted for as president, and in distinct ballots, the person voted for as vice president. So get this, they're writing this down, this name, George Washington, president, Thomas Jefferson, vice president. But actually, because this wasn't done during Washington's time, it was done after Washington's time, it would have been for Thomas Jefferson as president and Clinton as vice president, or so forth, and or Aaron Burr. But we've got a promos coming up, so let's go to the promos, and we'll be right back and get back into the 12th Amendment. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so let me explain a little bit why we're reading the 12th Amendment, because I don't want to wait until December when we go through the Bill of Rights, the amendments, and so forth, because that's usually when we do it. And because there is so much, I'll just say, political energy in trying to undermine the Constitution, there are groups out there that are getting states to actually not follow, not that we're following this process right now, but they're just trying to actually throw away the Electoral College and go to a popular vote. Pretty much, that's how it is almost in every state, but it's not good enough for the Democrats. The Democrats need to get us into a full democracy because, obviously, and what this means to me, because if you understand communism, this means that they have gotten to a position where they have control over the ballots as well as counting of the ballots of the general election. Now, they may not have enough of the states to where they can actually use the popular vote and take full control and shut the doors on our constitutional republic. Now, they may not have this in all of the states, but there are plenty of states that are being undermined, and you cannot give any latitude to these communists because they're very focused. That's why I've read the paradigm that Billy Graham pointed out in his commitment speech that he gave to his parishioners regarding a communist who broke off his engagement with his fiance, and that was a little while back. But anyway, so this is the process. They shall name, the electors in each state shall name in their ballots the person voted for as president. Yeah, I'm going over it because this is a long sentence. And in distinct ballots, the person voted for as vice president and the number of votes for each, which lists they shall sign and certify and transmit sealed to the seat of government of the United States directed to the president of the Senate. And the president of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all the certificates, and the votes shall then be counted. The person having the greatest number of votes for president shall be the president, if such number be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed. And if no person shall have a majority, then the persons having the highest numbers, not exceeding three on the list of those voted for as president, the House of Representatives shall choose immediately by ballot the president. But in choosing the president, the vote shall be taken by states, the representatives from each state having one vote. A quorum for this purpose shall consist of members of two-thirds of the states. And so, in other words, they're talking about how many representatives need to be there to be able to have quorum to make this vote count. So they need to have two-thirds of the states present. And a majority of all the states shall be necessary to a choice. And if the House of Representatives shall not choose a president, whenever the right of choice shall devolve upon them before the fourth day of March next following, then the vice president shall act as president as in the case of the death of other constitutional disability of the president. The words in the italics superseded by Amendment 20. And so if you go back into the Constitution, you'll see how the 20th Amendment actually made some changes in how the vice president would replace the president and so forth. But anyway, the whole point is really the choosing. So there's a third part to this. The person having the greatest number of votes as vice president shall be the vice president if such numbers be a majority of the whole number. In other words, if there's 140 votes, then it has to be 70 or greater. Actually, it has to be 71 or greater, right? Because it has to be a majority of the votes. And if no person have a majority, then from the two highest numbers on the list, the Senate shall choose the vice president. A quorum for the purpose shall consist of two-thirds of the whole number of senators, and a majority of the whole number shall be necessary to a choice. But no person constitutionally ineligible to the office of president shall be eligible to that of vice president of the United States. You get that? So in other words, they put these eligibility requirements on the president, and people think it doesn't apply, but the 12th Amendment actually applies it to the vice president as well. So as you understand, they made a minor change, but here's the point. Where did they talk about a primary? Where did they talk about how the democracy, instead of the electors, are the ones who choose out of the field of presidents? Now, it's the party who basically brings forward and selects their nominees, and then the electors are supposed to choose them? Actually not. We do not even follow the constitutional process in selecting our presidents. And it's been this way since the after 1860, they started using statutes and regulations because the party started driving this direction. And this was post-Lincoln, but the whole point, my friends, is that we are no longer following the constitutional process in selecting a president. This is a problem. And as a matter of fact, how would it have been if we would have had 20? Because back in the day, they had a lot of people that were out there. But everybody understood the magnitude. And even with Adams and Jefferson in the 1800 election, it was close. It was close. And it's supposed to be. But it's supposed to be close in a representative form, not by we the people, but by the representatives of the people. You realize that the whole point of selecting a president had nothing to do with the election of by the people. It had everything to do with the election of electors who were supposed to be either, you know, whether they were personally committed, educated, or what have you. You voted for somebody that you believed would actually represent your interests. And so a lot of times in the old days, these people were the people that knew what was going on. Most of America, most of those who were voters, the citizens, when they went to the polls, they knew their electors, but they didn't know some of these other names. Who's this Aaron Burr? Who's this Clinton? He's a governor of New York? That can't be good. And so they kind of left it because if you look at the roles and rosters of the delegates, electors, and so forth, it was always the who's who of politics of the time. They actually trusted these people to do what they were supposed to do in representing their constituents, in representing those who had elected them. That's what a representative government is all about. It's not about a democracy mob rule, and that's the direction that they're taking us. But there were protections built into the system back then. It wasn't anybody that was able to offer a handout so that they could get the poor to vote for them. Now that everybody is able to vote, now that everybody can vote for themselves, not that that's a bad thing, but it is a bad thing if you don't have skin in the game. And the best example I have of this is the corporations. When a corporation, the stockholders, are the ones that vote in a corporation governance election. And if you look at what they do and how that process works, just because you have stock doesn't mean you can vote in all these different stocks. You can only vote in those that you actually, have ownership stock in. And that is why they call it stake in the game or got skin in the game. And so when it comes to our politics, back in those days, they had that level of protection because they wanted to make sure that homeowners or property owners would not necessarily vote to redistribute the wealth. They wanted to make sure that they didn't create that type of system. The framers were very, very well aware of a socialistic, even though that term may not have been a standard term, because socialism was more of a derivative, but the concepts of statist government, where the states would be able to take and give, redistribute wealth and so forth, those concepts have been around since Plato. They were fully aware of this, and they wanted to make sure that they didn't create a system that would actually lead us down this path. And we've been on this path for over 200 years, my friends. And what that means is that they have been successful in knocking down a lot of these obstacles. And right now they're working very hard in knocking down some of the final obstacles necessary in getting their full democracy on board. Now, let me jump back into the Article 2 where we left off. And this is the next step. The Congress may determine the time of choosing the electors and the day on which they shall give their votes, which day shall be the same throughout the United States. In other words, Congress does get the chance to actually dictate when the election day goes. Now, when we come back, we'll get into the qualifications for the president, which we also read what the qualifications would be for now the vice president, because they both apply, or the qualifications for one apply to both. And so we'll be right back after these two promos. So please stay tuned. And then we're going to be diving down through Article 2 into Article 3. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
You know, as I was pondering this through those breaks, through those promos, I was thinking, you know, folks, we only have two, maybe three at best, elections left. And I'm not talking presidential. I'm talking about just elections, a national election of the president, the midterm, and possibly the president again. So 2020, 2022, hopefully 2024. If we do not actually get the momentum necessary in demanding constitutional compliance, because we are so far away from getting into compliance, that if we don't get states to actually stand up, because there's so many people that are, and I'm looking at some of these legislatures, I'm looking actually at some of the legislatures that I have worked with in talking and getting them to sign the pledges that have actually gotten into office, like in Idaho, and I'm going, you know, what the heck's going on? This guy is out to lunch completely. I would hate to think, and so we have to revisit, and this is one of the reasons why we need pledges of resignation. if somebody says that they're going to demand compliance to the Constitution, we can no longer trust them just by their oath or by their word. They need to sign pledges. We need, because, oh, well, I'm doing great work because I'm defending the Second Amendment. You know, while the whole rest of the Constitution is burning up, while we're witnessing the federal government shredding and states shredding every other part of the Constitution, well, at least you got your guns, right? And I kind of think about this all the time, because these fools that think as long as they've got their guns, they can defend themselves. Do they realize how quickly they can affect your lives of either taking you out of the medications that you need by disrupting supply chains? There's all sorts of ways that we could be put to our knees. And so, oh, well, at least you got your guns. I guess if it gets so bad, you can kill yourself. Not only that, but the way they can rain down upon an individual, a city block, and or an entire city. Go look at what's happened around the world and how we have actually helped with our military technology in leveling, you know, a house, building, and or city block and so forth. I mean, shoot. Even some of the rogue stuff that we've seen happen. I mean, if you think you're going to be able to defend and actually take back this country, things aren't equal anymore because they have not been compliant to the Constitution. We do not have a militia. We have a standing army. And I'm not talking about U.S. Army. I'm talking about the ATF, the BLM, and all these other enforcement agencies that are implanted that have the tech and have a lot of other things that you don't have. Anyway, let's not think about conflict. Let's think about compliance. They both start with C, right? So anyway, here's the standards in Article 2, Section 1. I'm sorry, I will trip up in the future today and in the past. I tend to trip up articles, section, subsection. So anyway, we're in Article 2, Section 1, and this is Part 4. No person except a natural-born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of adoption of this Constitution shall be eligible to the office of president. So in other words, you have to be moving forward a natural-born citizen, because there is nobody that was a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption. I mean, I don't think there's anybody that's still around. Neither shall any person be eligible to that office who shall not have attained the age of 35 years and been 14 years a resident within the United States. So in other words, they're covering that second part of the citizens with residency. So if you understand, we're talking 1787 when they wrote this, going back 14 years, well, okay, so the beer math would say that you were definitely here before the revolution, and that means that you weren't kicked out by the Tory acts because you were identified as a loyalist. Because you got to remember, tens of thousands of British loyalists were kicked out of America. Here's the next part of the Article 2, Section 1. In the case of the removal of the president from office or of his death, resignation, or inability, you got to remember, this amendment was changed. This was changed by Amendment Number 25. Resignation or inability to discharge the powers and duties of the said office, the same shall devolve on the vice president, and Congress may, by law, provide for the case of removal, death, resignation, or inability, both of the president and vice president, declaring what officer shall then act as president, and such officer shall act accordingly until the disability be removed or a president shall be elected. That's kind of scary that we kind of have those types of things, or that we've even had to go down that path. But anyway, let's wrap up Section 1 here. The president shall, at stated times, receive for his service a compensation which shall neither be increased nor diminished during the period for which he shall have been elected, and he shall not receive within that period any other emolument from the United States or any of them, from the United States collectively or any of the states directly. Before he enter on the executive office, he shall take the following oath or affirmation. I do solemnly swear. Now, this is the oath of the president that still stands today, that I will faithfully execute the office of the president of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Key words, faithfully execute, and then the other key words, preserve, protect, and defend. We have so many presidents today or in the past century that have failed to defend the Constitution. My hat's off to Calvin Coolidge, though, but as you know, Calvin Coolidge was a self-proclaimed progressive, but very few people know that. But the fact is, he was a huge labor supporter, and he was a supporter of collectivized labor. Anyway, Section 2, the president shall be commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy of the United States and of the militia of the several states when called into actual service of the United States. He may require the opinion in writing of the principal officers in each of the executive departments upon any subject relating to the duties of their respective offices, and he shall have power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment. So, in other words, somebody has to be impeached. And when they talk about cases of impeachment, I'm not sure here. We would have to look into the clarifications of this, because technically Congress impeaches and the Senate actually tries the impeaches and finds whether guilty or not. So I guess you would have to go through the full cycle, because Nixon was actually pardoned by Ford, right? He was not impeached. And what about Clinton? Because he never went through the full process, so he was pardoned. So I would say that this right there, the pardon has to come before the Senate actually tries the president and removes them. He shall have power by and with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties, provided 2/3 of the senators present concur, and he shall nominate, and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, shall appoint ambassadors, other public ministers, and counsels, judges of the Supreme Court, and all other offices of the United States, whose appointments are not herein otherwise provided for, and which shall be established by law, but the Congress may by law vest the appointment of such inferior officers as they think proper in the president alone, in the courts of law, or in the heads of department. Now, one of the things I hope jumps out here is it's obvious that the Senate actually has the bigger stick or the bigger responsibility in shaping the personalities, the persona, the attitude of the federal government, of these executive departments, whether they be the judges, whether they be the ambassadors, foreign policies, and so forth. That was given to whom? Well, if you understand who was controlling the Senate, it was supposed to be the states, because they were selected by the state legislatures. So as they created this Constitution, they wanted to make sure that the unique needs of the states were being represented, and here were the roles and responsibilities of the Senate that leap out to say that the states actually had a better control before the 17th Amendment in ensuring that the persona of the federal government was going to be of the right tone in representing them. The states, not the people. The president shall have power to fill up vacancies that may happen during the recess of the Senate by granting commissions which shall expire at the end of their next session. So, in other words, there's these recess appointments that can be made, but they will expire at the end of the next session. So, in other words, they have to go through the full vetting process with the Senate before they can actually have a permanent position in these vacancies. Anyway, we're going to wrap up Article 2 with Section 3 when we come back. And the rest of these parts of the Constitution are getting smaller and smaller, but we will be right, but equally important, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so with Section 3 coming up right here, he shall from time to time give to the Congress information of the State of the Union and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient. He may, on extraordinary occasions, convene both houses or either of them, and in case of disagreement between them with respect to the time of adjournment, he may adjourn them to such time as he shall think proper. He shall receive ambassadors and other public ministers. He shall take care of the laws be faithfully executed. So, in other words, it's his job to make sure that the Constitution is being followed, and shall commission all the officers of the United States. It is his job to receive foreign ambassadors. It is his job to receive these public ministers that are coming in. And we're not talking about religious ministers. We are talking about government ministers from other nations. It also talks about his State of the Union address. So these are the responsibilities of the president. Section 4, the president of the United States and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and convictions of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. You know, there was enough evidence on Obama that we could have easily had him kicked or impeached. But the problem is that we're just so corrupt. And it's I believe that there's, you know, when we do Republic, if you want to get to the bottom of what's really happened, we have to exercise Republic Review. We have to get our hands on all of these documents of what the heck happened, and we'll be able to start connecting the dots and who was involved, who was responsible for creating these accesses, who was responsible for giving the funding and so forth, and actually hold people accountable. section, or actually Article 3. Article 3, now this is about the judiciary. So Article 1 is about Congress and the legislature, the legislative branch. Article 2 is about the president, the executive branch. And Article 3 is the judiciary. Section 1, this ought to go pretty good. The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. And see, if you remember them talking about stacking the deck or stacking the court or packing the court, this is where the Congress actually has the control. Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The judges both of the supreme and inferior courts shall hold their offices during good behavior and shall at stated times receive for their services a compensation which shall not be diminished during their continuance in office. End of section one. So basically talks about the Congress kind of has control of the courts, but the judicial power will be vested, in other words, for the federal government, what they have jurisdiction over, the highest court of hearing will be the Supreme Court. In other words, their decisions are final. However, the key word is jurisdiction. So let's get into what that jurisdiction is. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. So in other words, they have to use the Constitution as their limits of jurisdiction. I'll say this again. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution. So where in the Constitution do they have the power or have been delegated the responsibility over marriage, over energy, over housing? Help me out, folks. Nowhere. Now, when you start adding treaties to this, the treaties also, because you got to understand the Supreme Court rules in foreign cases and so forth. And my point here is that treaties actually do become the law of the land. And so continuing on, the laws of the United States and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. To all cases, they have jurisdiction over all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers, and consuls. To all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction. Now, I already told you this, that the whole point of going back to Article 1, Section 8, if you read through the whole point of the Congress shall have the power to basically identify what laws and punishments for crimes committed, you know, high crimes committed on the high seas and or laws, violations against laws of nations. In other words, when a U.S. citizen is outside the physical boundaries of the United States, the Constitution has laid a mark down that says we have jurisdiction over this person. And this is why the Supreme Court right here has this authority and jurisdiction. And it says right here, to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, to controversies to which the United States shall be a party, to controversies between two or more states, between a state and citizens of another state. Okay, so this is this is the modification of the 11th Amendment. I'm just adding it again. Between a state and citizens of another state. Well, we actually have to go into the 11th Amendment to actually read that. And let me see, I've got enough time, so let's do that. Here's the 11th Amendment. The judicial power of the United States shall not be construed to extend to any suit in law or equity commenced or prosecuted against one of the United States by citizens of another or by citizens or subjects of a foreign state. I'll read it again. The judicial power of the United States shall not be construed to extend to any suit in law or equity commenced or prosecuted against one of the United States. So in other words, if there's a person that exists in one state and they're going and suing somebody in a different state, it doesn't mean that the Supreme Court necessarily has jurisdiction on that, or by citizens or subjects of any foreign state. So what this says is between a state and citizens of another state. So in other words, they, in this part of the original Constitution, they had jurisdiction, and the 11th Amendment actually reduced their authority and jurisdiction so that they didn't have jurisdiction. And also goes on to between citizens of different states, between citizens of the same state, demanding lands under grants of different states, and between a state or the citizens thereof and foreign states, citizens or subjects. So the point is with the 11th Amendment, it didn't mean that they didn't have jurisdiction, but it couldn't be construed that they automatically had jurisdiction. There had to be some very specific parameters, and they kind of went through this, claiming lands under grants of different states and between a citizen or of the citizens thereof, so in other words, depriving a person of their property and so forth, and foreign states, citizens, and or subjects. Next paragraph of Section 2, in all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers, and councils, and those in which a state shall be party, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. And so that's right there, the very first part. In all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, and those in which a state shall be party, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. In all other cases before mentioned, the Supreme Court shall have appeal of jurisdiction, but as to law and fact with such expectations and other such regulations as the Congress shall make. Now, one of the things that, it's important that I point out is that when you're looking at this whole language here, they keep on talking about cases. In other words, there's a case out there that somebody is suing somebody. The Supreme Court's job is never to originate a case. In other words, the Supreme Court doesn't come along and sue somebody. Now, the Department of Justice may go out down that path, but it doesn't say anywhere here where they can do that. In other words, the Supreme Court has a very passive role in their checks and balances on the other two departments. They have to wait for a suit or an appeal to come up to them. Now, most people say, oh, well, they have oversight and they have the ability and what they call judicial review so that they can actually pull things. Where does it say anywhere that the Supreme Court can pull in any executive order, any law passed, or anything like that to where they can actually say you can't do this? They have to wait until it becomes a case brought forth by a state or a party. The trial of crimes, except in cases of impeachment, shall be by jury. And a lot of times, trials by crimes are not being followed in that case, that they're not being done by jury. A lot of times, there's way too many times, because it says right here, shall be by jury. There are way too many times where a judge is making the decision because they ask the plaintiff, oh, well, do you mind if we just deal with the judge? Anyway, I'm going to mark this so that when we come back, we'll be in Section 2 of Article 3. So, folks, we'll be back tomorrow with the rest of this article. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.